Morning Magazine. It's Thursday, February 17th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the weather isn't the only factor keeping kids away from daycare this morning. A recent study found that Colorado is one of the least affordable states for infant and toddler care in the nation. We'll hear about how students at Fort Lewis College are learning a different approach on how to transition away from using fossil fuels. And food columnist John Lindorf will be serving up his weekly edition of Radio Nibbles. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines. Then it's a special edition of Black Talk with Michelle Simpson. She spends the hour with a still living survivor of the Tulsa race massacre. At 9:30, Brian Easter will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first, these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
The Douglas County School Board has announced the district will not release the names of teachers who called in sick the day of a rally in support of then-Superintendent Corey Wise. The school board emailed teachers earlier this week notifying them that those who participated in the sick out would have their names released by the close of business Wednesday in response to a Colorado Open Records Act request. After a closed session that lasted over an hour last evening, board member David Ray announced the unidentified individual who sought the names withdrew the request. According to the Denver Gazette, some teachers have found vitriolic flyers on their car windshields with statements that included, "Get out and leave, all teacher unions are bad." The school board majority fired Wise, a 26-year veteran of the district, the day after the sick out. State regulators put a drilling plan for oil and gas wells near Firestone on hold. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
State regulators want Kerr-McGee, a subsidiary of Occidental Petroleum, to revise a plan to add more safeguards and review alternative locations. The Denver Post reports that the location for the proposed 33 oil and gas wells is near a neighborhood in Firestone. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, COGCC, voted Wednesday to put off a decision on the proposal by Kerr-McGee until March 10th. The proposal is seen as a test of Colorado Senate Bill 181, a 2019 law that revamped state regulations to prioritize public health, safety, and the environment when regulating oil and gas. One of the new rules requires wells to be at least 2,000 feet from homes and schools, but allows exceptions. The exception with Kerr-McGee's proposal would allow wells to be drilled closer if a company's plan would provide protections substantially equivalent to drilling farther away. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment said in a letter to the COGCC that it should deny the application unless Kerr-McGee agrees to 13 steps to minimize the potential health and environmental impacts. The company has agreed to look at adopting more of the department's recommendations, including using electric drilling rigs and drilling with safer materials. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment announced yesterday it has sent an air pollution operating permit for the Suncor refinery to the United States Environmental Protection Agency for review. The state is proposing a renewal of the refinery's Plant 2 permit in Commerce City. The EPA has 45 days to review the permit. In its news release, the State Health Department says the draft permit includes more stringent controls and requirements while also highlighting monitoring and performance testing requirements. The refinery has been operating under long-expired permits that were subject of a recent court order in Adams County. A coalition of environmental and community groups, along with Democrat lawmakers, announced by a Capitol press conference earlier in the week the support of a pending bill called the Public Protections from Toxic Air Contaminants Act. Colorado Newsline reports the legislation will seek to set health-based emission standards and enforcements on industrial pollution sources that emit hazardous air pollutants like benzene and hydrogen cyanide. According to the activists, the federal government's lack of regulations and enforcements leaves it up to states to address gaps, and Colorado state-level air toxin rules have fallen behind. The coalition also stressed the gaps in federal regulation have left low-income communities of color, like the neighborhoods near the Suncor refinery in Commerce City, disproportionately exposed to toxic air pollution. The Boulder City Council voiced support for a majority of staff proposals on how to spend $4.4 million coming from the American Rescue Plan Act. The Daily Camera reports the city committed its initial round of funding last September by focusing on restoration of services and staffing that was cut at the height of the pandemic. The city is shifting to identifying solutions and programs that can address the community's more complex problems. Council members expressed they wanted more information about the Guaranteed Income Pilot Program, which staff wants to explore through $250,000 of funding to determine if the city could provide flexible, regular cash payments to low-income residents without restrictions. Staff also proposed using $2.75 million in total of federal funds if the city deemed the pilot program successful. The Daily Camera reports city staff is also suggesting the use of $1.5 million for a project that would offer daytime programming, peer support services, and in-home wellness services for people who are about to be housed or have become housed within Homeless Solutions for Boulder County. The Boulder City Council will hash out the funding proposals in a budget adjustment meeting scheduled for March. The federal government will release the next round of funding in July. Today's weather includes sunny skies with a high near 36. Tonight, skies in Fort Collins and Boulder will be partly cloudy and mostly clear in Denver, with lows in the upper teens, low 20s. Tomorrow's weather is expected to be sunny with highs in the upper 40s. The current temperature in Boulder is 10 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Schools in the Boulder Valley School District are on a two-hour delayed start today due to the weather. Early morning programs, including morning preschool enrichment and morning school-aged care, have been canceled. But even during mild weather, early childhood education across Colorado has been facing challenges in recent years. Daycare centers have had trouble keeping staffing levels up, and high costs have kept many working families away. Quality Childcare in Colorado, a Cost Study, is a new three-part research series authored by Meg Franco in partnership with the Bell Policy Center in Denver. She spoke with Gavin Dahl at Rocky Mountain Community Radio sister station KVNF about why Colorado is one of the least affordable states for infant and toddler care, the coming influx of federal dollars for early childhood education, and a new cost of care model for Colorado.
Your research found Colorado is one of the least affordable states for infant and toddler care. There are way fewer licensed slots for early care than there are kids under six with working parents.
Yeah, by a long shot. There's a gap of at least 45%. So both parents are working, just cannot find licensed childcare.
Now, I also learned from your work that public funding only covers 28% of childcare costs in Colorado. More federal dollars than ever will soon flow into our state for early childhood education. How much dough are we talking about? And is that a permanent fix?
We're talking a good chunk, over $350 million coming in from federal stimulus funds, but it is not a permanent fix. It's temporary. Most of these funds are going to definitely help the sector to hang on. We lost 10% of our childcare providers during the pandemic, and so this will help us from losing even more, but it's not permanent.
Bell Policy Center will be advocating on behalf of certain bills this legislative session, as usual. But I understand, Meg, you're also developing a new Colorado-specific cost of care model. Can you explain?
My colleague Andrew Brodsky is developing the model and has been working on it for a few months, both with Bell and with some folks at the state of Colorado. You know, even a local policy official could look and use this model to determine what it would cost to raise quality in their county based on prevailing wages and even based on making decisions to raise wages, because in early childhood in general and childcare, the providers, the actual workforce that are taking care of our children are woefully underpaid.
Meg Franco, thank you so much for speaking with KVNF.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
You can learn more at bellpolicy.org. For KVNF, I'm Gavin Dahl.
This next story is the latest installment in our series examining the transition away from fossil fuels in the Mountain West. Students at Fort Lewis College are learning a different approach on climate change and how to transition away from using fossil fuels. KDUR's Sarah Flower has more.
This is my dream course. This is my dream course because it's the course, the only course I teach.
Dr. Heidi Stelzer is a professor of environment and sustainability and biology at Fort Lewis College. This semester, she's teaching a course on science values and environmental leadership, an upper division level class that takes a different, more solutions-oriented approach to science. This includes examining the ecological effects of climate change and exploring alternative energy systems that move us away from fossil fuels. For Stelzer, teaching about what could be to future environmental leaders is just as important, if not more, than the basics of these subjects.
It's recognizing where and how much more learning comes from asking questions and where I can pop in fundamentals, but we're not dominated by fundamentals. There's still so much about the basic biology that we will cover, but we'll cover it through story, we'll cover it through questions.
Why does the sun shine? Why does the ocean currents flow? Why is there wind?
In the first week of class for the spring semester, roughly 20 students filled the classroom as small breakout groups were formed to discuss what the current role is for scientists and science in society today. Ashley Jorgensen is a senior majoring in environmental sciences at the college. Jorgensen says scientists' biggest role is to make a difference, especially when it comes to fossil fuels.
We have the technology there to make changes. Like, my first thought was like energy sources, and like solar panels have so much potential, but they're not being implemented anywhere. And so I think that's on a policy level for sure, because individuals can take action, and I think it's a mix of both.
Jorgensen says she appreciates the more philosophical approach to science and recognizes her role as a future environmental leader. Although looking ahead, Jorgensen feels that making those critical changes about fossil fuels on a policy level is our best hope. But for Stelzer, working and learning from the students' ideas is what helps her become a better professor and a scientist that can create change.
I learn as much, if not more, from students than anything I've ever taught them. And so when I hear that phrase, teaching solutions, I think if we can grow out of the space of what we see as the norm and sort of our first thought about what teaching is, and recognize it's a community thing. Because I have my biases, you have your biases, we all have those experiences that have influenced us for better and for worse. And where and how do we step into a space where we're open to hearing, how would you solve something? Tools do you want? What ideas matter? Who do you see is important? So we all have to be part of that teaching, learning, growing, thinking space.
This course's theoretical approach is just one of many in how education will play a crucial role in transitioning away from fossil fuels as they educate a new generation of environmental leaders. For KDUR News, I'm Sarah Flower.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. As always, I'm joined by our cannabis correspondent, Leland Rucker. Leland, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good to be here.
So you're going to tell us about a bill that would make cannabis use off work site legal. What's that about?
Yeah, you know, first off, according to the Department of Revenue in Colorado, there was $2.3 billion worth of marijuana products sold in 2021, last year. And that's just a slightly more than what was sold in 2020. And that adds up to the state collecting $423 million in marijuana tax revenue in 2021. And on the downside, every month after May, sales seemed to slow. And December was the seventh straight month where dispensary sales were lower than that same month the year before. And that's an indication, I think, that maybe the cannabis market in Colorado has peaked and those numbers probably won't rise as dramatically as they have over the last few years. And that drop in sales coincided with a 28% decrease in wholesale prices. So marijuana in Colorado, in many cases, is cheaper than it was when it was illegal. Pretty amazing. And the state has sold $23 billion worth of cannabis since sales began 8 years ago. Think of that, $23 billion worth. That's $23 billion that would have gone to the illegal market had we still had in place that it was illegal. And it shows that all kinds of people are using cannabis from all walks of life. And there's still some people who believe that legal sales were a bad idea, but there aren't that many people anymore. And there's still people who are going to grow for themselves and their friends. And it's true that cartels have moved into Colorado to grow pot and sell it out of state, although many of those have probably moved to Oklahoma because it's even easier there. But who knows how many people retired to Colorado for the views, of course, and for the chance to buy marijuana legally. We just don't know that. And, you know, the state has changed things as it comes up. The biggest change came with a legislative effort to tighten the rules around concentrates. And that just began on January 1st. And beyond that, I get a paper with information about concentrates in my sack when I get cannabis. We'll have to see how that plays out. That's the one thing that everybody has noticed so far. But there's a new bill in the Colorado House. It's House Bill 1152 that would make cannabis use off the clock no longer a fireable offense, and Colorado would become the first state to allow medical marijuana patients to consume at work. Federal workers, people who work with heavy machinery, would be exempt, and more than 86,000 Coloradans have medical cards. So this would affect a lot of people. And remember that Brandon Coates, a medical marijuana patient here in the state, who tested positive and was fired from his job at Dish Network, and the state Supreme Court ruled in 2015 in favor of the employer, even though Coates' use was at home. And that's not the only example, but it's only since states began legalizing that companies began rethinking drug policies. Many, because they're finding that doing a drug test to eliminate somebody for using cannabis in the past, it's making it awfully hard to find people to work. And I've always wondered about this. This is always something I've wondered about cannabis and alcohol. And there was a study published last year, and researchers found that though cannabis use has exploded in the last decade, there's no research or very little research that looks at the performance-related implications of cannabis use. So they did a study that instead of asking people whether they use cannabis or whether they had used it in the last week, they then went to their supervisors and had them rate their daily performance. That's really getting in there. They spent a whole year. They followed 281 participants and their managers, and they found that cannabis use before or during work might have an effect on job performance, but there was no such correlation with after-work cannabis use. And I think that's something we have to think about. Alcohol use is seen as a mechanism to wind down and take stress off of the workday. It's encouraged and marketed that way. And yet companies don't view cannabis in the same way, even though people use it for the same things. And the authors postulate that using alcohol often leads to hangovers, which can affect the next day's performance. There's two states, Nevada and New Jersey, that have laws that let employees consume legal cannabis off the job. And the Massachusetts Supreme Court ruled that medical marijuana use off the clock isn't grounds for dismissal. But nobody, no state allows medical marijuana use at work. And I think that's the part that probably won't make it by the time the bill gets done. It hasn't been popular in the legislature so far. The most recent bill last year was voted down 0-10 in its first committee. And Leslie Weber, who is Normal's executive director, she told Westward Magazine they've done a lot of outreach since then. We'll just have to see what happens. But I'm not going to be holding my breath on this one, remembering that no one should be arrested or fired for putting a substance into their body.
Well, it's certainly an important conversation to be having. I mean, everybody works and we do have legal cannabis in the state. So thank you for bringing that to our ears, Leland. We always appreciate your cannabis insight.
Thanks a lot. Good to be here.
For KGNU, I'm Hanley Myers.
And you can tell by the sound of Cab Calloway that it's time for Radio Nibbles and breaking local food news. Today, John Lindorf joins me from his personal pie factory in Louisville. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Shannon. And yeah, there's a lot of food news led by the sad announcement that Nosh Boulder has closed down services. If you didn't know about that, Nosh was a locally owned, restaurant-owned food delivery service that was doing a really wonderful job of taking care of restaurants, giving them a fair deal, taking care of the drivers. And unfortunately, they just didn't make it.
But why?
My understanding is that it just wasn't viable financially for the people who were putting up the money to make it happen. The number of deliveries didn't go up dramatically, even though the city of Boulder was backing it. Nosh is still doing well in Fort Collins, and they hope to come back, but it's very sad. They were charging a 15% delivery fee. Some of the other ones charged 30%.
Wow.
And so I hope another locally thought out sustainable food delivery service, makes it.
Wow. Okay. Well, and you also have some more sad food news?
Oscar Blues, the tasting room down on Pearl Street, closed. But on the other hand, Mountain Sun Pub, which had been closed for 2 years, reopened. So they kind of balanced out beer-wise. At the same time, there's a new Latin-inspired restaurant and tequila distillery that opened in Broomfield called La Distillería. Thank you very much for that.
Yes.
So I think it's always a bright day when a new tequila place opens down the road, and there's other new places that are opening, including a genuine patisserie in Lafayette, Jeannot's. And so it's pretty wonderful.
Well, we are coming up on the bottom of the hour, so I'm going to have to ask you, before I ask you what the best thing is, what's in the Nibbles column?
It's all about why local farm fresh eggs are better than the ones you get at the supermarket and why you should support the people doing that.
Oh, yes, of course. So you can read John Nibbles' column at boulderweekly.com. And now tell me, what's the best thing you've tasted this week?
I've gone out of my way to taste all the plant-based burgers in the area. I stopped by Metaburger, which opened recently in 29th Street. And, I'm putting them to the top of the heap. They walk the talk. Everything on the menu is plant-based, including the cheese and the shakes and everything else. And the burger itself is better than the equivalents at the other places.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because just the other day I was near there and my daughter was like, what's that place? I'm like, I don't know. I think it's a thing. I think, you know, it's alternative burgers. And so we weren't quite sure and we were just not motivated to, you know, go check it out on our own. But you did that for us. So thank you so much, John.
Thank you.
All right. So, you know, we have the drive coming up. We will be talking about the drive.
And that's coming up at the end of the first week of March. And if there are local food businesses that want to support KGNU and contribute membership thank yous, you know, contact Verity down at the station and it'll be a great thing.
Yes, absolutely. Get in touch, please, if you want to help support the station as a restaurant. You know, we're here every week. John, you know, given the news about the local food news around town, please make it a circular situation and we can have those thank you gifts offered up for our listener members. Thank you, John, so much, as always, for joining me.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, Gavin Dahl, Sour Flower, Hannah Lee Myers, Leland Rucker, and John Lindor for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for Black Talk.